What's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
And welcome to this edition of the Bullpen. As always, I'm James Roy, and with me is Tom Chavarria. Tom, how are you doing today?
It's a great day to be a Texans fan. We just don't know how to lose right now. They're in a great groove, and I don't know, man. I know some people were, you know, doubting that this team could get it back together, and now they're having to walk that back, and you know, D'Amico's looking like the guy that was pushing all the right buttons when people were saying, you know, maybe D'Amico's not the guy, maybe Nick Caserio's not the guy. So it's a good time to be a Texas fan.
I think it was he's the host of Banging the Can. I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but he has pretty consistently expressed what I feel like is my opinion. So I don't feel uncomfortable citing him here, but he said in a recent episode that hits the nail on the head of what you said, which is that, you know, D'Amico for the first like several weeks of the season is like, we're so close. And like, after hearing that for like 3 or 4 weeks in a row and just not seeing it, you just start to get really frustrated. But D'Amico, turns out time tells who is right and who is wrong. And D'Amico was right. The Texans were very close, and they finally have figured it out to an extent where they're finally putting wins on the board. So it's very impressive to see what they're able to do. And I think it's a really good part of the season to be in, because it feels like the Texans are close, not just in the way that they're playing, but in the way their schedule has shaped up late in the season. They're in a really good spot. With that in mind, before I get started, this is live for a reason. If you guys have anything you want us to talk about, make sure that you hop in the comments. An active comment section leads to the best possible episode of the Bullpen in every single case. So make sure that you are dropping a comment. Look, Brandon Halam is already in the comment section. He is quite literally the OG goat of commenting in the comment section. They were a benching of Lakin Tomlinson and City Sow away. Could have guessed. I could have guessed. I think we all could have guessed that there was more talent in the room, but I'm glad that an injury brought that to the attention of Cole Popovich and Nick Caley. With that, let's get started. We'll talk about the Texans-Cardinals game first. Beautiful matchup. I mean, it went about how we would have thought. There's some people that would say the defense underperformed, which is, I don't know who those people are. I mean, it was interesting to see comments like that, given a 40-20 win is a 40-20 win. And I would argue that a lot of the offense's success was based off the defense's ability to set them up. Not to take away from what the offense did, but the first talking point that I have is CJ Stroud had probably one of his best, if not his best, game of the year. He was rated the most accurate passer on PFF, and there was a lot of things. Eye test pretty much told you exactly the story that we're saying, which is that he had a really good week. Do you think there's anything about the matchup, like say that it was the Cardinals, that discounts that? Or are you just looking at it just raw data? CJ had a good week. It's a good sign we're progressing.
I think it's a little bit of everything you said. You definitely have seen the progression of CJ Stroud. I think that goes hand in hand with what Brandon's talking about with the offensive line getting right. It was you could just tell there was a guy that was unsure of the guys in front of him. He was unsure that he was going to be protected, and he just couldn't stand in and make accurate plays. And now you fast forward, and I think it was much more than Laken Tomlinson and CeeDee So. I think, you know, I don't know that any of us saw them moving Trent Brown to right tackle and moving I'm struggling with names now.
Titus Howard.
Moving Titus Howard in. I think, you know, he made a bunch of comments that made it look like he didn't want to play inside. And that's a reason why I know for myself, I thought that he was never going to go back inside because he wants to be paid like a tackle. He wants to play tackle. And that's the position, you know, he's most comfortable in. Well, fast forward. And now he's looks like one of the best left guards in football. And, the offensive line, all of a sudden, well, it's not perfect. You know, Ed Ingram got beat a few times. And I think if you are going to get beat for a quarterback, and I don't know this because I've never been a quarterback in the league or in any, you know, major whatever. But I would imagine if I was going to have to deal with pressure, the pressure that I can see in my face, the pressure that's in front of me is way harder, way easier to deal with than the pressure I can't see. So when you're talking left tackle, left guard, that's the blind side. So you need that. And I was there. I was throwing it into crazy windows. He was. I think his feet were happy. I think he was in a hurry to get the ball out of his hand.
Yeah, I mean, I felt like he was hitting his windows. Brandon brings up a great point. I mean, Stroud was hitting some crazy windows. There was some throws that were super impressive. I remember making a comment. I said, wow, Stroud's hitting his throws today. And someone in the replies was like, well, no, it's not the case. Stroud sucks. And it's like, so some people are going to continue to take this sample. They're going to take the sample they want to of what CJ is, and they're going to make a judgment on him. But I think personally, there was a take by one personality on Twitter that was very negative towards CJ, but I think there was a lot of truth in it. And that is that, you know, this team is going to depend on CJ turning the corner. And that's going to be a big question that needs to be answered throughout the rest of the season. And I think CJ is doing a very good job of emphatically answering that question. He is ready to be with his team's needs. I think what has been proven by what's up?
I was going to wait till you were done, but
you go ahead. I stopped. So now you go.
I think what the CJ gives you right now is enough to do exactly what they need to do. Like what more does he have to prove or provide? I think you talked about, you know, this past game, if he's going to give you 75% completion, 250 yards and 2 touchdowns, there's a good chance the Texans are going to win that football game, especially
100%,
you know, with the way the defense and the way the special teams is able to play. And, you know, we haven't got there yet, but I definitely want to talk about the special teams because they had a monster game too.
Oh yeah. 100%. And like, to finish my thought on it, like, I think that CJ's intangibles have never been people have questioned CJ as a quarterback, but what we've learned, I think, over the past few weeks is that him being an accurate passer, him being an excellent, you know, field general decision maker who can run this offense is something that's been in question because of the way the offense is played, but I'm not sure it's been the problem with the offense. So as I've always said, I mean, there's this triangle of blame that I feel like exists in the Texans offense, whether it's scheme, offensive line, or CJ Stroud. It always seems to kind of revolve around those things. And it's been very few times where I can say honestly that CJ Stroud's play has been the reason this offense hasn't been able to be successful. So I think that if anything, what we've learned, you can temper expectations based off of it being the Cardinals, but the better part of the Cardinals defense is their pass defense. And the Texans stepped up in first play of the game pretty much showed them exactly who they had. And I think another part of it is that Nick Caley, as long as it's taken him to figure it out, you know, CJ Stroud is excellent throwing the ball over the middle. All of the stats on in-breaking routes across the middle of the field point to CJ Stroud being a savant when it comes to throwing those passes. It's almost like he knew where the receiver was going to be before they knew where they were going to be, and he put the ball in their hands. So I think that Nick Caley leaning into that and giving CJ a lot more of those opportunities has helped. And on top of, I mean, obviously the O-line shuffle can't be entirely disregarded. I think that moving players around, I agree with you. I think it's more Trent Brown coming in at right tackle and allowing Titus Howard to shift in. And I've spoken to it before. I think that that in and of itself is great because there's a whole other offensive line configuration that I'm comfortable with. You know, if you know, knock on wood, right? If one of those two players was to go down injured, I can reconfigure that offensive line and feel comfortable with it based off players that are on the bench. With Patterson literally riding Pine right now, I feel like he could step in and play serviceable left guard. I feel like if Trent Brown goes down, you bring in Patterson at left guard and you shift Titus back to right tackle. If Brown goes down, or if Howard goes down, you literally just bring Patterson at left guard, and it's not going to be the same, but I mean, it's not going to be the worst case scenario. I think this team has options in offensive line configuration, which is huge considering it literally felt like there was no viable option from a lot of the start of the season. So a huge development in my opinion, but looking at the game outside of that, I obviously alluded to it earlier. This defense allowed 20 points to the Cardinals. And a lot of people, I think, look at that and go, the defense slacked off today and they didn't do their job. What do you make of the defense's performance against the Cardinals? What do you think are some contributing factors to maybe them allowing? It is a high amount of points to allow, but I never really felt like the defense was that far off of what they usually are.
I think people have unrealistic expectations for what a defense should be, given all the variables, right? Like, you look at any team in the league and you know, they jump out to a crazy lead, defense is going to take their foot off the gas. People were saying this at halftime because they gave Arizona 7 points. Now, if you wanted to have that conversation in the fourth quarter when it was 20 and they missed the 2-point conversion or whatever, sure, okay, I guess. But I mean, you also have to put it into context. They were up by, you know, 3 scores and it didn't matter. Like, I get that, you know, people get enamored with stats and want recognition and, oh, well, look, it's the greatest defense of all time that ever was. And yeah, would that be a nice little feather in the cap? Absolutely. But at no point in time do the Texans have to live up to some, you know, oh, we can't give up 21 points or we can't give up 20 points or we're just not doing it today. Now, D'Amico came out afterwards and said, you know, I think our defense can be better. And he's supposed to say that. But I think for the majority of that game, it was never in question. If they ever really, really got busy outside of Trey McBride, who is the top tight end in football, he is somebody's number one wide receiver. He's Arizona's number one wide receiver. And is legit. Like, dudes went over 100 receptions the last 2 seasons in a row. There's only a handful of tight ends that have ever done that ever. Guy's a baller. So if you're going to be upset that a really good player got his, I mean, I don't know what to tell you. You know, there's a bunch of teams trying to stop Nico Collins. Nobody can do it. I'll tell you that Michael Wilson, I think it's Michael, right?
It's Michael Wilson. Yeah.
Yeah. He's been eating everybody alive in the absence of Marvin Harrison Jr., and they shut him completely out till a garbage time touchdown at the end. And for me, I think that, you know, that's the bigger story. Hey, they kept this guy in check. They were like, all right, Trey, you're going to get yours, but everyone else isn't going to eat. Not a running back, not another wide receiver, not nobody. And that was the thing that I took away from the defensive performance. You know, the other thing I really feel is super important is there were some guys that got nicked up a little bit. You know, they were kind of rotating guys in and out. Your defense is going to struggle a little bit when your A guys aren't playing the entire game. So when Derek Stingley, you know, gets banged up a little bit and he comes off the field a little bit, now guys are going to have opportunities they probably didn't have before. So I'm not worried about the defense. I'm not worried about the sack numbers. If you haven't been paying attention, you know, because you only watch the Texans and you're like razor focused, the number one passing yardage QB in all of football since he took over was the guy playing for Arizona. And that guy's had, you know, history with the Texans. He's 5-1 against the Texans. So, you know, Brissett is a good quarterback and I think he was held in check for the most part. So.
No, yeah. I mean, Brissett is a good quarterback. I mean, he has a really good record against the Texans. I think that the Texans did a good job of holding him in check. If all they did was give up a bunch of yards to Trey, then I don't really know if there's anything to be mad about. Michael Wilson, as someone who picked him up in fantasy, you know, in the offseason, I was like, oh, Arizona's wide receiver too. Might as well pick him up, and has tracked his progress. I mean, that's been a player who has shown up in a big way for that team, even when Marvin Harrison Jr. is playing. So to hold him in check, he had like a 43-point fantasy game the week prior. You know, to hold him in check is a huge deal, I think. And I don't think there's, I mean, I don't have too much in terms of notes for the Texans defense. Speaking of defense, University of North Texas defensive tackle Avion Carter is in the Instagram chat. Hey, Avion, known Texans fan. I believe he's at TCU, transferred over to University of North Texas. Congrats on the season that y'all had over at University of North Texas, because that's huge when your coach is getting picked off by the big conferences. You know you had a good season. So, yeah, beautiful stuff out there. Looking at this game overall, we're kind of entering a stretch of Texans football where they're playing what some would call the lighter portion of the schedule. Do you feel like this Cardinals team played better or worse than what was expected from them, given, you know, what the Texans expected going into this game?
I feel like people say that based on the score. You know, they look at the score and go, oh, Arizona put up 20 points. And you know, they played really well. And in the context of the game and how it started and how the Texans ran out to a 17-point lead, I don't know that it was like that. I mean, did they make some plays? Yes. I think good, you know, or every football team is going to make some plays. You're not going to stop anybody for, you know, an entire football game. They're just going to scheme you up eventually. Somebody's going to slip, you know, something's going to happen. Teams are going to make some plays. I don't think they played exceptional. I don't think they played bad. You know, the players that were expected to do well for Arizona did well relative to the score. But, I mean, they didn't do enough to win the football game.
Yeah, I mean, I think what it comes down to is that, and I mean, D'Amico showed this early in the season, right? To speak to Brandon's comment, like even when defense like basically was the only reason the Texans were in the game, D'Amico would step up to the podium at the press conference and talk about where the defense fell short. He's, I think, very much a perfectionist in that way. This Texans defense, if you can say they had an off game, cool. If there was ever a time for them to have an off game, it was definitely this week when the offense can make up for it. I mean, I don't think D'Amico was going to be happy with anything short of a shutout. So, if the Texans defense gives up more than 0 points to the Raiders, we'll hear him, if he's asked about it at the press conference after, say, yeah, disappointing week. Like, it's just the least surprising thing that I've ever seen. But yeah, I mean, overall, I felt like it was a good team win. It was one of those ones where, like, you know, a lot of times I feel like I'm on the edge of my seat for a whole Texans game, because they're like the cardiac kids and they like to like make me wait till the very last second to know if I'm going to be happy or sad for the whole rest of the day. And in this case, the Texans kind of made it very abundantly clear early on that I was going to have a pretty good day. So with that in mind, like whatever defensive shortcomings happen, I know D'Amico's going to iron it out, but I felt like overall the team did pretty well, all things considered. Looking ahead, moving into Raiders week, hence the title of the episode, Just Win, Baby. You know, we're not going into Vegas. They're coming out to Houston. This is a team that has one of the worst offenses in the league. Geno Smith, I believe, has potential to return, which is not a good thing for the offense. If anything, it's like just a status quo, whoever's playing quarterback for that team. My big question for you, just to start out, is do you think that the Raiders are in a position now where it could potentially be that the Texans beat them so bad that Pete Carroll leaves Houston, not the coach of the Raiders anymore?
I hope that's the conversation. This game screams trap game. I really hope.
Yeah.
I really hope that, you know, they come in, they get on top early. It's never close. You know, the worst thing that could happen is Houston allows them to hang around and hang around and hang around. And it's a, you know, 6-point game, you know, 7 minutes left in the fourth quarter, something like that. Because these are the type of teams that have nothing to play for, that are literally playing for a coach's job, that are going to go out and play way above their heads to try to do something to go, see, look, we can be a good team for this guy. Don't fire our guy. And, I mean, it just feels like this is one of those games. Now, obviously, if the Texans show up, you know, eye on the prize, and from the get-go, they come out, you know, we're going to put points up. We're gonna three and out. We're gonna you know, have Geno Smith running for his life. We're gonna put pressure. Yeah, you know, they should beat them. I think the spread is what, 14.5, something like that.
Yeah, something crazy.
They should win by that much. It should never be close. You just never know in football. You just don't. Like the New Orleans Saints have nothing to play for. They've been playing good football. I think they beat Carolina. And Carolina's got everything to play for. So if you do the front of the jersey thing and the record thing, you go, oh, we're going to win because of who we are, you'll get beat.
Yeah, I feel you on that. I think that Pete Carroll's one saving grace, and kind of segueing into my next question, is that the Texans are pretty banged up. I think that there's a good reason to believe that if there was ever a game where they could potentially Kawhi Leonard some players – and just put them on the bench and maybe try and win with them in street clothes, this is the game. Potentially I could see them putting Derek Stingley and Lassiter on the bench, or one or the other. I don't know. There's just a few players, Woody Marks, that I could see them resting, in which case it could be a slightly more competitive game, than maybe it was thought to be. I don't think that the Texans will rest those players just for the sake of it. I think that they would have to view those players as being injured enough that a rest game is needed. I don't think they would go, oh, you're kind of hurt, let's rest you anyways, and like put them inactive or anything. But I think that's something that could potentially come up. Do you think there's high risk that a significant amount of the Texans players maybe don't play due to health concerns for the team?
It's so tough because you need the win. You absolutely need the win. I don't know. We're going to learn a lot about D'Amico going into this game, because this is not a situation he's been in before where I've got guys, I could potentially play them, have a really good chance to win. I could save them, knowing that, you know, odds are I've had a really good job, a really good idea whether or not I can make the playoffs, and just try to win with some guys that, you know, maybe aren't as good, but they've been in my system. They know what I want. They're going to be serviceable. I don't know what he does. At time of recording, you know, we're not going to get that answer. I think Friday is the telltale, or time of recording, time of live. Friday is what you know. If they practice Friday, they play. If they don't practice Friday, they almost never play. So we'll know tomorrow for sure.
I personally, what I think it could be is we could see guys like Derek Stingley and Kamari Laster play the first few drives. And if the game starts to shape up like the Cardinals game and the Texans take close to a 20-point lead early, I think we could see those guys not in street clothes, but maybe on the bench by the second half. But I would hope that that's the way it goes. I mean, I think that too many times teams are so caught up in like not wanting to be that guy that they force a player out there who could really use the rest. Like I'm looking at Kamari Laster. That dude has been playing through that foot injury beautifully. But if there's one player I can think of, I really am stuck on the cornerback position, as one of those guys should probably rest to some extent because they're very vital to this team's success. We already saw a lot of Tremont Smith last week, late in the game. I don't think the Texans want to treat this like it's not a serious game. That's how teams get beat, assuming they have the win. So I think we'll definitely see if they can play some number of those. I think the player that's most likely to not play at all is probably Woody Marks. I think that that's a position where Jawar Jordan showed a lot last week. You can justify leaving Woody Marks, you know, maybe not inactive, but maybe giving him a significantly smaller chunk of the play while Jawar Jordan shows, you know, continues to show what he has. I mean, he was signed to the 53-man roster.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Since 2011, American Giant has been making everyday clothing with extraordinary effort. Not in far-off factories, but right here in the USA. We obsess over fabrics, fit, and details, because if you're going to wear it every day, it should feel great and last for years. From the cut of a hoodie to the finishing of a seam, nothing is overlooked. Our supply chain is tight-knit and local, which means less crisscrossing the country and more care in every step. The result is durable clothing, t-shirts, hoodies, sweatpants, and denim that become part of your life season after season. This isn't fast fashion. It's clothing made with purpose by people who care as much about how it's made as how it fits. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to HarlemGlobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Do you think the backups can cover Tyler Lockett? Crazy.
I think it's Nick Chubb, by the way, that makes Woody Marks able to sit. You know, the fact that they have both of those guys to be able to go, and it's not, you know, Jawar Jordan and Dare Ogunbowale or Jawar Jordan and British Brooks or something like that. I think
I'd see a Jawar Jordan British Brooks backfield. Let me see it.
I mean, a lot of people do, and I'm not totally opposed of it, but at the same time, you know, one of those guys lays the ball on the ground and changes the game, and then you're like, did you have to do it? You know, I feel like that's something you got to kind of work your way to. We looked out. Jawar Jordan had a monster game last week. I don't know that a lot of rookies come in and just off the street, you know, off the practice squad and run wild like he did. So we'll see. How that shakes out, but I think you've seen Chubb practice the last 2 days. Probably a good chance that he plays, and that makes Woody able to sit.
I agree with you. That's definitely more push. I think that we'll see Jawar Jordan fill Woody Marks' role, and I think that they would probably shift to Nick Chubb as the primary in that situation. But I think it's definitely Nick Chubb being healthy that would lead them to be able to do that if they make Marks inactive. Which is, I mean, possible. He's been pretty beat up for the past few weeks. But speaking to health as well, obviously the Texans have placed a second defensive lineman on IR in Mario Edwards. It's the second week in a row. Mario Edwards and Tim Settle were acquired around the same time. They've been pretty vital to the team's success in a very small way. Not that it's small to do what they do, but they're not the primary guys, but they're guys that allowed D'Amico to rotate defensive linemen, keep the interior defensive line fresh. With these injuries, D'Amico was asked by Landry Locker at the most recent press conference about this. He said he intends to continue rotating. How do you feel about that room? In terms, they obviously just acquired Naquan Jones from the Chargers. They've got some depth. I mean, Kurt Heinisch is still on physically unable to perform. So, if off the top of my head, that room looks like Sheldon Rankins, D'Nico Autry has the flexibility to play in there, and then
Tommy Togiai
are pretty much it. So how do you foresee them continuing to rotate, given who's left?
I mean, you just named the guys. You know, they technically still have four guys with, you know, Naquan Jones, Togiai, and Sheldon Rankins and Danico Autry. So I think it's just enough. Now it's razor thin. They really can't afford to lose anyone else. You definitely want to have the surplus. And it's funny because, like, you know, we talked about this during the draft. You know, why do they spend, you know, so many draft day picks on, you know, defensive linemen? And it, you know, by the end of the season, you understand it because they're, you know, getting banged up and stuff happens. You know, that's got to be a really tough area of the football field to be. You know, it's just a big meat grinder in there, I would think. And I mean, who knows? I really hope that whatever Nick decides to do going forward, I just hope he keeps bringing fresh bodies, because Tommy hasn't played this much.
Oh, I feel like he's taken on a primary role throughout the season, because they can't go without his run stopping. I mean, he's like certified middle stuffer, just absolutely cannot get past Tommy Togiai. He's starting to rack up sacks. He got Pat Mahomes. Another player that I forgot to mention that I think was signed this week was Marcus Harris, former sixth round pick out of Auburn by the Texans, who had been released. And so that's a player they've brought back to kind of fill that role too. And I'm interested to see what he can do. I don't want to say undersized, but he's a little bit smaller relative to the other interior defensive linemen. So I'm interested to see what he can do, if he can crack that rotation and potentially make his mark. But I mean, I think if D'Amico says they're still going to rotate, he obviously feels comfortable with who they have in the room. That is a group that I've consistently spoken to how well Nick has done putting together. You know, I don't want to say the scraps, because that's disrespectful to what they've been. Everyone they picked up has contributed significantly to that group's success. But I think he's done a good job with, like, veterans, journeymen, just random 1 and 2 year contracts, putting together a group that D'Amico can work with. I think Nick was recently on a show, or maybe it was D'Amico, I can't remember which one, spoke to the fact that, like, they've basically communicated with each other what D'Amico needs in an interior defensive lineman. And Nick has been able to very thoroughly scout out these players that fit the bill of what they need without having to break the bank to get them. And it has and will pay dividends for the Texans moving forward, that they're not investing trillions and millions of dollars into the interior defensive line. Someone actually brought up to me that Christian Wilkins is still a free agent. And I was like, I don't know if the Texans really need him. I mean, how much is he going to cost? Like, is he still going to command a similar contract to what he got from the Raiders before he kind of fell off? Is he good to go? Is he a swarm player? I mean, there's a lot of questions to be answered with that.
You know, the guy that's still out there that was recently asked, you know, in light of Phillip Rivers coming back, could he still do it? You know, there's a dude, I mean, maybe you've heard of him. You know, there's this guy, his name's in the Ring of Honor, you know, Justin James Watt, you know, 20 plays.
I heard his number's available.
You know, I mean, it's got to be a long shot. You know, I know he's doing a great job in the booth. All he's getting is all the praise in the booth. But, you know, I couldn't help but wonder if, you know, another guy goes down and people are like, hey, the Texans could really use, you know, interior defensive lineman. You think you know.
I know you said last season was the last season where D'Amico could do that. But if I'm D'Amico Ryans and it reaches that point, I agree with you. If there's one more injury, if we come out of this Raiders game and one more interior defensive lineman goes down, I'm on the phone with JJ and I'm like, look, I know you got a sweet gig with CBS. That'll be waiting for you next season.
We're trying to get you a ring, baby.
Do you want to make a Super Bowl run? Do you want to be a Texans legend with a ring? Honestly, if Andre Johnson was closer to playing and the receiver room got that way, I'd hit him up. But I think that Andre's a little further gone. But JJ's just right at that, like, the pivotal moment where, like, you could still – and the way he's talking about it on the Pat McAfee show, I'm convinced he would do it. I think that he's put on this front, like, I wouldn't do this. Like, I have said last season was the last time. But, like, if the Texans called, oh, man, he'd be at 6'10 in Kirby in an hour. And he'd be putting in work.
So I know the storybook ending is your thing, but I'm going to steal it for a second. You know, hypothetical, of course. You know, guy goes down, name your guy, whoever goes down in the Chargers game. And, you know, the Texans are scrambling, ain't got anybody, you know. All of a sudden, Wednesday, McAfee's got JJ on. He's like, hey, Jage, you know.
Jage.
Texans really could use a body there, Jage. You know, Indy coming to town, you know, need to get a win to win the division. Jage, what do you think? And, you know, he's like, nah, you know, I don't know, maybe. Ah, what the hell? Throws this thing on. He heard it here first on the Pat McAfee show on Wednesday. You know, I'm soon to back up with the Texans and coming out of the tunnel and then, you know, to place the Colts. Like, you can't get more storybook than that.
Let me add some editor's notes. J.J. Watt is in the booth for the game against the Chargers when the injury happens. And Ian Eagle literally turns to him and says, J.J., it looks like the Texans need a defensive tackle.
And that's when it all starts.
And they pan to the booth and J.J. just kind of looks at the camera like, you know, maybe. Maybe. And then
y'all heard it here first, people. Y'all heard it here first. We wrote the story for him. We wrote the script.
Man, I've got goosebumps, man. I'm feeling it. This could really happen. I love it. I love to believe like that JJ Watt could come back. I think that for the longest time, that was really the only thing that kept us going when things started to look really bad on offense last season. It's like, maybe JJ Watt will return and everything will be better. I still can't get over like 2019 against the Bills in the playoffs. That sack on Josh Allen literally changed the entire game. And I'm not the only one who thinks that, thank God, because back then I wasn't on Twitter like I am now. So I didn't know that other people thought that, but I saw that play happen. And I was like, I turned to my dad in his backyard in spring. We were watching the game and I was like, that's game. Like, the Texans are going to come back and win this. And so knowing what he's capable of as a defensive player, I mean, if he says he can give you a sack a game as it goes, or a sack here and there, and put back on the pads, hit him up, try and get him back in the building. Like, I'd love to see it. One last comment, before we get into our score predictions. I got one, over here on Instagram. Says, do you think they will keep their offensive coordinator? I think at this point you have to. I mean, I unless something goes drastically wrong, I agree with Dan Orlovsky that Nick Caley is one of, if not the most improved coordinators in the entire league throughout the season this season. I think that you have to explore that. You have to give him a chance to build on that. You have, and I've obviously expressed a contrary opinion prior to now, but I think you've reached a point now where you have to give Nick Caserio another chance to make edits to that offensive line and see if we can, you know, get cooking. It's a lot easier task than the Chiefs had. The Chiefs had to delete their entire offensive line and try and fix it in the middle of a dynasty. That's like no bueno, but they've progressed it so much this season to the point where I'm comfortable with Nick Caserio having another shot at that, with Nick Caley and company, you know, and Cole Popovich giving him some pointers on who they need and what they want to make that work. But I don't know, how do you feel about Nick Caley at this point, Tom?
Hold off on Nick Caley a second. Where's the producer? Run it back, get the tape of James Roy going, Nick Caserio build an offensive line? Absolutely not. I can't trust Nick Caserio to build an offensive line. He's had two shots at it and can't build an offensive line. Why on earth would we give him shot number three? He has had plenty of opportunity and picks, and all he did was spend them everywhere else frivolously. He did not invest in the offensive line enough, and I cannot allow him to try it again and screw it up for a third time and waste more of C.J. Stroud's, you know, rookie deal. Absolutely not.
I know exactly what you have in mind because I've watched enough reality TV with my wife where they like have like the characters in the show like say something. It's like, I never said that. And then the producer immediately B-rolls like just every time that person has said that exact thing. And so I know what you mean. Maybe I'll clip this and I'll also clip every episode from the season where I said contrary, but my opinion has shifted and it's allowed to do that.
100%. No. Jalen Petrie remembers.
Jalen Petrie remembers. Dalton Schultz remembers. Nick Caserio remembers. Add them to the hall of people that James talked really poorly about and owes an apology.
But to speak to Nick Kelly, this was a rookie offensive coordinator who had never been an offensive coordinator anywhere. Not like assistant, you know, he was a tight ends coach coming from, you know, the McVay tree. So you had to know this was going to take time. You had to know that there were going to be growing pains. You had to know that he was going to call some plays where we would go, what was he thinking? Because there's a lot of innovation going on in the league. You look at what Detroit does from time to time. I mean, I could name a couple other different, you know, Chicago's got a lot going on with Ben Johnson. And that's how they got there. They're going to make those mistakes, you know, learning what works, what doesn't work. I see him trying to get more creative with the playbook. What I love is I feel like they're getting in and out of the huddle better, which means the play's getting in quicker, which means they're able to convey it. Something that blew my mind, and I know this is not, you know, this is not Colts week. We'll talk about that during Colts week. But if you watch Phillip Rivers, right, because I was enamored by the idea that he was just going to walk in and play. I had to watch it. You know, it was must-see TV. That dude got in and out of the pocket or in and out of the huddle so quick. He's up to the line, got everybody lined up with 15 seconds to figure out what's going on and then make changes. And I'm like, the Texans struggle with that mightily. And
you know how Phillip Rivers was able to do that, right?
Well, yeah, that's his offense. That and that was his offensive coordinator when he was in San Diego, and that was his offensive coordinator when he was in Indy.
They're still tight. So Rivers was coaching high school football, and his offense very much mirrored what the Colts are doing. They reported that they regularly talk weekly, like about that offense and like how to run it. So like Phillip Rivers is very antiquated with that offense, which is why he was immediately able to do that. And I think the reason CJ is starting to get there is finally he's had enough time in Nick Kelly's offense that he can finally, you know what he needs to do. Let's see. We got a few comments in the chat. It says, my friend thinks Tua is better than CJ. You need to check your friend into a mental institution because that is actually enough evidence to warrant you doing that against his will. Like, he doesn't need to consent to that because that is legitimately an insane take.
The Miami Dolphins don't think Tua is better than Quinn Ewers. So there's a whole nother comparison that they need to make right now before they even talk about CJ Stroud.
I can assure you that CJ Stroud is better than Quinn Ewers, even if we're not talking pro, because the Ohio State Buckeyes literally picked CJ Stroud over Quinn Ewers. So, I mean, I don't know. There's a lot to unpack there. There's actually not a lot to unpack there except for your friend from your car into the mental institution against his will so that he can be assessed for insanity, because that is a legitimately insane take. And then we got a few comments from Brandon here back to the defensive tackle conversation. And one of the questions I wanted to bring up was, do you think we are hurting for edge depth more than defensive tackle? I think that it's getting to a point where a defensive tackle is hurting more, but I see what you mean with edge, because with, you know, Darnell Taylor not working out the way the Texans wanted him to, they had to bring him back from IR, even with has, you know, okay as he's been, not the ideal person you want to add to that rotation, but, you know, serviceable, I guess. But you would have hoped to have gotten a better version of him, and that's just not what's played out, but maybe we will. But I think the Texans have moved to a point where I think the deeper concern is defensive tackle depth for now. I mean, it could definitely shift back to defensive or to edge. But what do you think, Tom?
You know who checks both of those boxes? JJ Watt.
I knew I should have known. Like, I want to say that I knew, but like I went to turn that over to you. And what I should have done was, and Tom thinks JJ Watt would fill that role very nicely. And I
very nicely moved
into the next. JJ Watt would be the answer to both of those questions. What question do Texans fans have that JJ Watt isn't the answer to? I mean, that's really the question.
look, I had Culliver's in honor of him tonight. Totally got the JJ Watt meal and everything, cheese curds and all.
Ooh, nice. I mean, even look at the offense. Put J.J. Watt in at tight end, and I think it fixes quite a few problems for this Texans offense. So,
I guarantee he can block.
He can block. He can block. I think he can do it. Let's see. Now let's get into our score predictions. After we obviously address the mental insanity that's going on in the Instagram comments and the question about defensive tackle and edge. Tom, I'll let you go first. What do you got in this one against the Raiders?
I want to be like, I want to be something crazy, but 30 to 13.
You should go crazy because I'm gonna try and keep it pretty sane.
30 to 13. I feel like they could score, you know, another 40 piece. I just don't think they will. I don't think they'll need to.
I feel like I'm pretty comparable to you. Like, I literally thought of my number before you said yours out loud, and it's like very close to what you said. And I know why yours is different, because you have to account for two field goals for Kyemi Fairbairn.
Every time. He's going to get two.
Game.
He may not make them both, but he's going to kick two.
But mine is very, very similar to yours. Actually, no, okay. I was like, is it literally like reversed numerals? But no. I've got them 31 to 10, the Texans winning. I think it's reasonable, a 21-point win. When you said go crazy, I thought you might predict like 49-0 or something. I got a coworker that's a Raiders fan, and I literally like went up to a whiteboard when he came into my office, and I wrote up Texans 49, Raiders 3, just to mess with him. I think that, I mean, there's no need for a storybook ending. You did the storybook ending, and I gave my editorial comments.
The season ending, yeah.
That we'll stick with that as our storybook ending for the day. But I think this Texans team can't, I mean, even if there's a significant amount of people resting, I have a lot of confidence that they can put up, you know, a good amount of numbers on the scoreboard. And that's all you can hope. I mean, if it looks exactly like the Cardinals game, that's a win. I think that they need to be focusing on getting everything fine-tuned going into, you know, even with Danny Dimes down, And all that's going on over in Indy, that's a tough opponent. Even with as little confidence as I have in the Chargers to challenge the Texans in any way, they are still a top AFC team, and that is someone you can't discount. You know, going out to LA, and you know, going in and going to get the win right after Christmas. So I think that, you know, this is your tune-up. This is your get in there and make sure all systems are go, and really, you know, drive it in deep and see what you can do. I don't think you should let off the gas until you're certain. You know, double tap, make sure they're dead, and then go back and make sure again. Trust but verify. But yeah. Tom, do you have any final thoughts before we bring this thing to a close?
Nothing really. I'm praying for health. I think everyone, if you're the prayer circle on Twitter, it should just be health, because I believe they've got more than enough to win the game. It's, you just don't want to see anybody get nicked up. Right now, injuries are running rampant in the league. Big name players going down with soft tissue injuries. And for me right now, this team is got all the pieces if they can just stay healthy.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. That's the name of the game. I mean, this is, I don't want to say this is a nothing game. I don't want to, like, you know, allude to this being, you know, just kind of target practice. But the deeper goal here is like to not lose a significant and important player against the team that you should be able to beat without that player. Like, that's really, I think, the gist of it. It would be incredibly frustrating to see any player that's vital to this team's success go down against a team that they just really didn't need to be playing against. Oh, what's up, Tom?
One last thing, and I know I was going to talk about it earlier, and then we got away from it. The special teams balled out, and the special teams need to keep balling out. Jalen Noll is absolutely going to take one to the house at some point. It could be against the Raiders, and if they're going to, you know, create turnovers by, you know, laying big hits, I mean, that's complimentary right there all the way around. I needed to say something about the special teams, because they literally set the tone for that whole game. And if they can do that going forward, that's just one more building block to getting this thing done.
That, I guess, brings up another thing. Now that we're bringing up other things right at the end, because it made me think about it. But I agree with you, Jalen Noll, what can't that dude do? You know, thank God that Braxton Berrios didn't even get a chance to show anything, because we didn't need to see anything from him. Jalen Noll is ridiculous as a special teamer and as a wide receiver. the big thing for me is this week, something to keep an eye on. Justin Watson is designated to return. I don't know if he will return this week. I'm interested to see if he'll be a healthy and active, or if the team will activate him and play him. I know early in the season they really liked what he was doing. I'm interested to see how it would affect the current wide receiver rotation. It seems like every time the Texans bring in one of the wide receivers from lower in the depth chart that we kind of view as, you know, depth for the team, they tend to play a larger role than one would think, because I guess Nick Caley wants to give them their run. I'm not really sure why that happens that way. So yeah, my thoughts, you know, to conclude my final thoughts is I'm interested to see how this wide receiver room shakes up with Justin Watson potentially returning in this game. But with that, thanks for tuning in to this edition of the Bullpen. To everyone except for your friend who thinks Tua is better than CJ. If you think Tua is better than CJ, turn off the show. Don't ever tune back in. We do not want to see you see us. Not that that guy's watching, but just a special shout out to him. I have been James Roy, and you can find me at James Roy NFL wherever you get your social media. Tom is TC Tom 1 on Instagram and Third Coast Tom on Twitter. And we are the Bullpen, the number one veteran-run Texans podcast in the entire universe. So thank you for tuning in. As always, stay classy, Houston, and vamos Texans. Thanks for tuning in to The Bullpen, a Texans podcast. Please like, comment, subscribe, and follow along for more Texans talk from The Bullpen.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.